welcome to 4Panel, geek show all about comics and manga. If it's drawn on a piece of paper with a speech bubble, we'll talk about it.
Yes, hello. How you doing, Ben?
I'm pretty good. Yourself?
It's been an interesting weekend. Yesterday was interesting, making cupcakes with... It started off as making cupcakes with my nephew and my niece. And then another nephew appeared. And then another nephew appeared, and then another niece appeared, and then we had visitors in the house from pretty much everywhere. So the house was full of people while I'm trying to make cupcakes with a bunch of kids.
And I don't also see anything playing wrong with that. Sounds like fun.
From like 9 o'clock in the morning till about 8 o'clock in the evening, I didn't actually sit down.
Oh, well, my day consisted of sitting down and editing the whole day. I think I prefer the cupcakes.
No, you don't.
I do.
No, you haven't been at an Asian family gathering.
And wait, shall we talk about the news?
Yes, let's talk about the news. It's more interesting than my day yesterday. Aside from the cupcakes, which turned out rather well. Unfortunately, when there's loads of kids about, you don't get cupcakes, you get the leftovers. Lando Calrissian.
Yes, everyone's favourite.
Yes, he's getting his own solo Star Wars series at Marvel.
Oh, cool.
The Adventures of Lando Calrissian.
Well, it was not that long ago we talked about the fact that...
Princess Leia?
Yeah, Princess Leia is getting her own series. And tell the truth, Lando is more logical.
Well, Lando's a player.
Exactly.
You know,
So he goes off in adventures, seducing all the ladies.
Yeah.
With his smooth
Empire
voice.
Strikes Back, the first thing you notice about Lando is he's into Leia.
Yep.
You know.
So he can do... And he's got a backstory with Hans,
yes.
So there's obviously does some interesting stuff.
Didn't he win the Millennium Falcon off Lando in like a poker game or something like that?
I think so, yeah.
It was some ridiculous reason as to why Han owned the Millennium Falcon.
So it makes complete sense. I mean, it's going to be... It gives an excuse to add depth to who's already an interesting character that was sort of... One of the lesser players, really.
Well, I like this approach because, you know, with the original Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back, right?
Yeah.
They basically had spin-off books. There was the Han Solo books, but there was also the Lando Calrissian books.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not very often you have books dedicated to a character who is... he's a supporting character and he doesn't appear at all in the first movie.
Yeah.
You know, he's not there for the entire trilogy. And I like the fact that there's been, you know, historically Star Wars has had a focus on some of the more minor characters. And I like the fact that that's continuing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll be looking forward to Lando, or Star Wars Lando, as it's going to be called. Moving on to Wonder Woman.
Yes, a lot of Wonder Woman news today.
Yeah,
really.
A lot of Wonder Woman news, but we're going to start off with this one. The original this headline, I said this to Ben earlier. This is actually in joke form because I don't get it. All I could do was laugh. The original Wonder Woman director's pitch was too epic for Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I don't get how a story can be too epic. Well, not even a story, a pitch.
Yeah.
Was there like fireworks and people running around dressed as Wonder Woman as...
You know, bouncing bullets off bracelets.
Yeah. It just... And wouldn't that be a reason to get the thing of the pitch itself was that epic?
Exactly. I mean, what kind of... has the producer mentality in Hollywood changed all of a sudden? I don't understand this. If a pitch is considered epic, the first thing you do is bite the hand off that's offering it to you.
Particularly with... I'll tell you, DC have had a bit of a duff movie run so
exactly.
far. So maybe a really good movie, and with a character that is in demand at the moment.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because there's been such a rise in the female comic reading community.
Yes.
They're crying out to have a female lead, and hey, people want Wonder Woman. Here is, to your own admissions, an epic story. Why not go for it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it looks like because they've changed the director, haven't they?
Yes.
It's Patty Jenkins now. The original director, Michelle McLaren, she's no longer in charge. Basically, according to various sources, McLaren's vision for the Gal Gadot-fronted Wonder Woman film was an epic origin title in the vein of Braveheart, while Warner Brothers is aiming for a character-driven story that was less action-oriented, an approach they'll reportedly stick to if Jenkins remains attached, as in Patty Jenkins.
Okay, so it's action form of epicness that was the problem.
Yeah.
They wanted more character-central. But, Dad, you've tried character-focused things. You usually do that with the Supermans and such, and they haven't been that great.
Well, wasn't Man of Steel a very character-driven bit for the first three quarters of the movie?
Exactly.
You know, before they basically broke every single Superman rule in the book by killing Zod. Superman don't kill. He's notorious for it. Same with Batman.
Tell the truth, I don't mind that moment. I think it was a good choice.
Yeah.
I think it was shocking, but in the end, weighing up the choices, he's probably better off doing that. And
no,
I kind of admired it for that. It was the fact that the rest of it was slow and boring and not interesting at all.
Yeah.
Maybe taking the Die Hard approach to it might have helped.
Yeah. What, Superman go around go yippee-ki-yay?
Well, no, but you're saying the Wonder Woman heads over Die Hard ville. It just, if you had that, maybe it'd be more engaging. Why don't you stop trying to do a character-based thing and just have a good character doing interesting things?
Yes, that's always more interesting as a movie than just, you know, especially when you're having superheroes involved.
Yeah, so it's just, a lot of it seems to be, let's force character down the viewer's throat, rather than letting you just, like, you can tell a lot about a person by their actions.
Yes.
So have them do their actions, and then sort of have the character come across. The reason so many people were shocked by the end of Man of Steel was the fact the rest of the film didn't reflect this man.
Well, that and the fact that 70 years of Superman history, he's always said he will never kill.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of played a part.
So you get what I mean?
Yeah, like, I do understand what exactly.
When the entire thing was like, nothing oh, in the movie I need to be that moral, I need to not kill, I need to do all this, and then at the end he kills. It's like,
yeah. I mean, it's kind of the lesser of two evils, but Superman is a character who has always chosen neither evil.
Yeah.
No matter how much pain it's caused him. So, you know, it kind of went totally out of character for him, and everyone kind of went,
yeah.
So, yeah.
So they went too. So, apparently, you can't have an epic story about Wonder Woman.
Yes, apparently.
And the fact that they're switching directors all the time doesn't bode well either.
Yeah. On the back of that, though, Superman, segue, the new Dawn of Justice trailer dropped.
Yep.
And what was it? They did a trailer to announce a trailer.
Yeah, the Batman versus Superman. They did a teaser trailer, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know when they were planning to show the actual trailer, but they did a teaser trailer. That basically, all the things you learned was the movie's happening, and they might have suits that look very identical to suits you've already seen. Ooh, yay! Oh, I'm so excited now! Batman's going to be wearing a Batman outfit! Ooh, jeez! Oh, Superman's wearing Superman. Is there a cape? Oh, there's a cape.
Does he have his red pants?
It's just, it's annoying. Yeah. Like, is that the internet being the internet, they were able to find a copy of an actual trailer and leaked it all over the web.
Yep.
And despite DC's attempts to hide it, they managed to, the internet is the internet, so it stayed up. And eventually DC launched the trailer actually that shows some stuff going on,
and in the process launched it's the trailer that launched 1,000 memes because of just the last line in it.
No, 1,000 memes. You made one meme.
Well, one meme, but yeah, just that last line, do you bleed, you will. So many memes based on that now. Do you want fries with that? You will.
Yeah. So you can, they always, with all the superhero things, if you have a corny line in that, people are going to pick up on it.
Oh, God, yeah. There's some brilliant memes based on that, though.
So, the show, trailer actually showed the people in the costumes. That's a nice change from that teaser. It put some like background on some of the discrepancies that's maybe causing this conflict. There's talk that sort of like TV hosts talking about how we're talking about all the good that's coming, but we're not talking about the repercussions. And there's a statue of Superman that's slowly getting lit throughout the trailer, and then you see it's defaced.
The words
at the end.
"False God" on the end. Got it.
And you also saw Batman in bat armor.
In his bat armor with the blue eyes. Do you know when it got to that bit? I blame how it should have ended for this, because you know they did that. You know when the original teaser came out and you had Superman in the sky and Batman on the ground, they're just staring at each other. And how
surprisingly,
it should have ended,
that had more than the teaser trailer did.
And how it should have ended did that, but then it had both Superman and Batman just kind of going, and then just bursting into laughter because they couldn't believe they were in a movie together. I was watching the trailer when it got to that bit. I just kept expecting both of them to suddenly start laughing.
Okay.
It's just like, why? It's supposed to be like a serious dramatic moment, but how it should have ended has ruined it for me.
So, I'm a little more excited for this, basically just because I saw the bat armor. Because I've seen in like a load of other iterations when they do Superman versus Batman, he always builds a badass armor mech thing to fight him, and it's always badass, and it always gets torn apart, and Batman has to use actual logic to beat him.
Yeah, but bat logic isn't bad logic.
Actually, we discussed this the other week.
Yeah,
bat logic. Based on the TV show, bat logic is random logic that just so happens to work.
Yeah, well, that's more Adam West logic.
Yeah.
Right. Moving from one teaser trailer to another, Fantastic Four.
Yes.
New trailer for that.
Movie is looking nice. He's looking a lot more sort of interesting than the old movies. Fantastic Four and the Silver Surfer.
I like the look of the thing in the new trailer, but
Fantastic.
Yeah, you suddenly clicked onto what I've been saying for a while.
Rob's been saying they're a bit young, and I was fine with the fact they were young. But it's at the start of this trailer where this professor's like, "Oh, you've been studying this for years. What's changed? Why are you gonna be doing so much better? We have Reed Richards." Pans around to an image of a guy who looks like he's about 15.
Yep.
I'm like, really? This is the guy that's like, oh, we've got all these creative minds showing all the rest of them. Like, they're all so young. Dude, you're putting all your hopes into a kid?
It's like a kindergarten, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. Like, the old movies had a lot of faults, but their casting was stellar. Everyone looked like the characters. Now, I'm not so sure. Like, Reed Richards is a professor. He knows his stuff. He's got like multiple degrees
and
stuff.
Doctorates and stuff.
This kid looks like he's still handing in his homework. In fact, there's a scene where they're in like a university library. I'm like, this guy's studying to hand in his
homework.
Yeah. I just it's hard to keep take them seriously.
And then Jamie Bell as the thing.
Yeah. Ben Grimm's a bit of a bulky guy. He's like, he's big. They had the guy from The Wire in the last one, didn't they?
No, it was The Shield.
The Shield.
Yeah.
He's big, he's tough, he looks tough. But in this one, they go over like, oh, you're the muscle. Like, oh, yes, I'm the muscle. And it's like just a really skinny guy who's just like, it looks like I could beat him up.
It's exactly what I was saying. I look at him and I just keep thinking Billy Elliot.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm expecting, you know, Ben Grimm to, you know, do plie and so it's like, things like that.
In the old ones, when Ben turned into the thing, it looked natural because he was still a similar sort of build. He's like completely changed like his entire build structure. He's just like, oh, I'm the thing now. And he's just sort of giant, and like, where did that come from? At least pick someone with a similar build to the thing.
I mean, conservation of energy is a thing. I'm pretty sure of that. You know, you can't make mass out of nothing.
Exactly. I know we're working off comic book rules where things can go skew-if.
Yeah.
But still, there's just like, everyone still looks sort of similar. Like, I've got to go back to... And I don't... I'm defending the old Fantastic Four movies. They were terrible. But, I like the Thing. Although he's, like, a boring version of the Hulk, he had interesting emotional things going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Thing... one of the big differences between the Thing and the Hulk was that the Thing was still Ben Grimm.
Yeah.
It wasn't this mindless machine that, you know, broke Harlem.
Yeah.
But with that came all of the kind of emotional problems. He's still a man. He still has, you know, he still feels the need for a companion. And he...
Oh, no, my wife doesn't love me anymore.
The thing is, the way that happened with Ben Grimm in the actual Fantastic Four comics was actually quite sad, because his wife couldn't cope with what, or his fiance, whatever she was, couldn't cope with what he'd become.
Exactly.
And it literally, and he ended up with in a relationship with a woman who was completely blind.
Yeah. So the thing was, in this, does he have the fiance to lose? Because I'm not sure you're allowed to marry when you're only 12. So he's like, seriously, he looks too young to be getting married. So is he going to have a girlfriend? The loss of a girlfriend isn't as serious as the loss of...
Also, isn't Ben Grimm supposed to have, like, isn't he supposed to be a decorated military guy?
Yeah.
He's supposed to have a history in the military, and he's supposed to be a pilot.
Oh, I was in war when I was 15.
Yeah.
I was in war before I was potty trained. But I'm not quite sure why he's British.
Is he from Essex now? Are we going with Joy Essex for Ben Grimm?
Apparently, but it's the fact that he's way too small to be Ben Grimm. It's a big issue for me.
Yes, I agree.
Everyone's too young and everyone's too skinny. Eat a sandwich.
Now you understand why I was saying, you know, you see them and you just want to ask them if their dad's in.
I don't have a problem with them being young. It's the fact that they're...
too young.
They're young and then they're talking about them as though they're great minds.
Yes.
Like, they haven't had the opportunity to become great minds yet. If they were like, these students have great potential.
Yeah.
They think differently. I'd be up for that. But he's like, oh no, everything rests on this guy. I'm like, he's too young a guy to take that risk with.
Yeah.
Like,
I agree.
I'm university educated and McDonald's won't take a risk on hiring me. Why are they taking a risk hiring this guy and putting their entire project on it?
I totally get you, man. I totally get you. Right, we'll move on from that before Ben rages even more about Fantastic Four.
Oh, no, love the movie!
You're going to be doing that all day, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Right, TV show announcements. Howard Stark, right? Howard Stark is, according to a tweet from from co-producer Seth Rogen, AMC is going to be doing Preacher, the Garth Ennis series. About Jesse Custer and God and the Saint of All Killers and all that. And I love that graphic novel series. It's amazingly good. And if you haven't read it, you should read it. Howard Stark is going to play Jesse Custer. He looks perfect for the role.
So I don't know how they're going to do half the characters in this. How are they going to do Arseface?
I'm not sure.
Exactly.
What about the one-eyed girl?
Yeah.
The Cyclops girl. I don't understand how they're going to do that as well.
Is it like there's a lot of very unique characters in this that are going to be hard to reproduce?
Yes.
It's like, if they can do it well, it'd be amazing.
Who's going to play God?
It's going to be me.
I was about to say, you can't get Morgan Freeman again. I don't think he'd be up for that one, considering how God ends up in the...
It's like, tell you what, God is always a good role to have on your CV, even if you do die.
Yeah. Played God.
Yeah. It's like, in future, you're just like, oh, so I'm good enough to be God, but not this guy.
Yeah.
What are you trying to say?
Actually, it's a very good argument.
It's like, we don't want you for part sacrilegious.
It's an age-old thing, you know. If Morgan Freeman was running for president, people would vote for him, but only because a lot of Americans believe he's been president once already.
probably vote with him because he seems to have a better.
No, he's played
ideas.
Morgan Freeman is one of there's lots of Americans who think that Morgan Freeman is like a real representation of God because he's played God twice, and that Obama is actually standing in for Morgan Freeman because Morgan Freeman is the real president, or that Morgan Freeman was the first black president because he was president in Deep Impact.
Aren't they discussing education cuts over in America at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd probably rethink them.
Anyway, it's actually Dominic Coop.
Yeah.
Right, who's going to play Jesse Custer. And the reason I call him Howard Stark is because if you remember the Captain America movie, the first Avenger, he was the one who played Howard Stark. Cooper. Yeah. Is it Dominic Cooper? Sorry.
So, I was getting confused there for a second.
Yeah, Dominic Cooper.
So, he seems good for the role, really. Yeah. Like, and this will let him spread his wings a bit more because it's
going to be a challenging role for him. It's going to be a very challenging role.
But I think he can pull it off quite well. I've seen other stuff that he's been in, and he's a good actor.
Yeah, he's a really good actor. Anyway, moving on.
Familiar with the comics world as well, since he's doing Avengers movies. So
exactly. Marvel and ABC are looking at superhero TV shows, right? Now, there's very few details about this. This is a secret project. It's coming in from that John Ridley, the writer and producer of the award-winning film 12 Years a Slave, is working with Marvel Studios on a new television show for ABC. It's going to be the third series for ABC after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, fourth if you factor in the reported Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spin-off in development. Right. This Marvel project apparently involves reinventing an existing Marvel superhero character or property, but nobody's narrowed the field down to any particular characters that this could involve.
Well, I'm hoping they go more down the route that they have with Daredevil than they do the route with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, I think that they should bring in more of the other characters who aren't part of the Avengers.
Yeah, so it's more the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was a spin-off of, like, the popularity of Coulson in the movies.
Yeah.
And it was decent, but it was very campy. It was very sort of like that sort of style of things.
Yeah.
Daredevil, on the other hand, went a bit more serious with things. And DC having hits with Arrow and Flash in that sort of vein of...
Yeah. Who do you think they could do, though, if they're focusing on one particular character? There's so many.
Gambit. That would be a great one.
Gambit would be an amazing TV series.
Yeah, I hope they don't go for someone obvious like, oh, we're going to do a Wolverine.
Nah.
Because we've seen enough of Wolverine now.
I agree with Gambit. I think that... the thing is, I've always thought it was a shame that... Because you remember the Silver Surfer cartoon?
Yeah.
I'd love to see a TV series about that because it'd be like superhero Star Trek.
Yeah.
You'd be killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever you do, don't put somebody who thinks they're Captain Kirk in the role of Norrin Rad because he'd just sleep his way across the universe.
Oh, tell you what, kind of cool. Scott Summers' dad.
Oh, God, you are bang on. You are the leader of the Starjammers.
Starjammers, yeah.
Yeah,
do a Starjammers series. That'd be awesome.
That would be amazing. Oh, Space Pirates.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God, Ben.
And you could have loads of crossovers like X-Men, all the other stuff going on.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and you could go to like all the planets they talk about in these things because they've got such a huge library of stuff.
Oh, that would be amazing. That's it. Marvel, you heard it here first. Starjammers, the TV show. We want it.
Yep.
You know, it's the ultimate crossover series. You could have the Guardians making an appearance.
Yeah.
You know, you could have the Avengers in there. You could have, the Hulk showing up from time to time. You could have them all.
You could have all the Hulks. The Hulks all over the universe. You can find them all.
Yes. And put them all on Planet Hulk and let them fight. Sorry. I had to get that in there. Right, okay. Marvel, Starjammers.
You know, it could be in there.
Right. In our continuing look at the weird combinations that Archie comes up with, we've got two here. Archie Assembled.
Okay.
The Archies assembled, in which the Archie characters apparently get superpowers and must defend the world from various things. I mean, they've got some of the comic bits here. I was a teenage Jughead, and Jughead becomes a mutant who looks a bit like Wolverine, but instead of the claws, he has a knife, fork, and spoon.
yeah.
That come out. I have no idea why. And then
because that's the joke that everyone always makes.
Yeah. And then they've got the Teenage Bulk, where one of Archie's friends gets hit by an electrical storm and chemicals, and instead of turning into the Flash, becomes the Hulk, Purple Rage Monster. What was it? Me mad, very mad, want to bash something, in typical Archie form. But that's not the weirdest one of the week. Weirdest one of the week is Archie versus Sharknado.
You see, the thing is, you keep saying weird, but I'm so used to Archie just doing weird things now, I'm desensitized.
Yeah, why? Predator, okay, that was weird, I was happy, I thought, okay, just leave it at that.
Because why not give it against unsentient weather disruptions?
The thing is, I looked at it first. If I hadn't seen the title of this, I would have thought Archie versus Jaws, and I would have gone, oh, actually, that's not bad. That could work. But then I looked at it again, and I saw like this spinning whirlpool-type thing behind it.
Yeah.
Because it's got the shark cover for Jaws.
Yeah.
Right? And I thought, Archie versus Jaws. Obviously, you would. But then you got the spinning tornado-type thing behind it, and I thought, hang on, that's not Archie versus Jaws. So I read the title, Archie versus Sharknado, which makes far less sense.
Tell the truth, none of this makes sense ever.
Mm.
Like, they're just like, hey, now Predator's about. So why not, hey, Sharknado's happening?
Yes. Yes.
It makes about as much sense.
I agree. Right.
At least it's on the same planet this time, so.
Very true. Very true. Right. That was the news. We're going to be heading into some comics, are we?
Yep. We'll be back in the second half of this break.
Cool.
Hello, this is Ryan from the Geek Show Podcast Network. Do you like trees? What about paper? What about words? Yes, words are good. Then you will like Literally Loitering, unavailable on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to 4Panel, and we're getting into some comics. Do you want to kick us off, Ben, with
sure.
Something?
I will be talking about Transformers number 39. And I gotta say, Transformers is using the fact that they're robots very well with getting away with things that you wouldn't be able to if they were humans. For instance, this starts with the main character of this one, Tarn, torturing a guy. And he's done this by opening up his head and putting his brain in his mouth. You cannot get away with that if they were people.
That just sounds weird.
Yep. So they're using the fact that robots really well. So this is about Tarn. He's basically a notorious killer on the Decepticons' side. And it's him coming to deal with some things. Throughout this, you find out that Megatron has defected. He's, not defected, he's just left. He's like, yeah, I was wrong about everything. The whole Decepticon thing. Yeah, I was wrong.
What?
Yeah, he admits defeat, basically. He says, I thought we had to kill all the organics that were a threat because we were superior, but I've now worked out we're not really superior. And so I'm really sort of saying no to the Decepticons now. So from now on, Decepticons are no more.
He disbanded the Decepticons.
Exactly, yeah. And when you are, like, a group of Decepticons and you are a known killer in the Decepticons, it's kind of hard to take. You do horrible, horrible things for your entire life in the name of Decepticons. So, what do you do then? And his reaction is, no. I am going to hook up with a group that were basically blacklisted. They were thrown aside. They weren't wanted. Ran by a guy called Deathsaurus. It's one of the most metal
Deathsaurus
names.
Deathsaurus.
Yep.
Deathsaurus. Yeah, you are right.
That is the most metal name ever. And basically tries to get this group because he's like, Megatron may have left, but he is, and I used to put him up on a pedestal as the highest thing, but I've now realized he's beneath what Decepticon really means. And now people are seeing that the Decepticons are disbanding. They're seeing we're all, and they're using it as a chance to wipe us out and kill us all. Decepticons were about survival and striking first, and I'm not going to let the Decepticons die out. So this is my army, and we're going to go get them.
Wow. Lots of changes there.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Transformers. Like I used to be when I was a kid, but I was more of a Beast Wars sort of guy. But the stuff going on is really interesting. Like, it's cool seeing how people react when the entire world's been switched upside down. Hmm. And some of us don't get to become King of Bel-Air. Some of us get our leaders abandoning us.
Yeah, true.
So it was cool seeing those reactions.
Fantastic. Right, my turn?
Yep.
Okay, I've got James Patterson's Max Ride First Flight. Maximum Ride First Flight, I should say. But it's just called Max Ride First Flight.
Yeah.
Now, this is issue one. I've got to say, I'm already hooked.
Okay.
This is really unusual. Basically, the story premise is you've got these orphans, and they're basically been adopted by a guy who helped them escape the Institute, where they were basically treated as test subjects, guinea pigs, in a variety of experiments that gave them different types of wings.
Yeah.
Right. And they've been on the run for about 4 years. They found a place to hide, but their guardian has been dead for a year, and the Institute has been hunting them down. Now, the Institute has these werewolf-type creatures who have been hunting them for the last 4 years, and they finally close the net and steal the youngest one, who's called Angel. And so the rest of them say, we're a family. We're not leaving her alone. We're going after her. So they're heading back to the Institute. Yeah. Along the way, they stop off at a city where Maximum, the leader, she gets into an altercation and things happen. And she gets shot, and it stops there. That's basically all I'm going to say about this. Artwork is actually really good, and I love the cover.
Yeah, it's a very nice cover.
You know, I love the cover. But I love the idea of this comic.
Yeah.
And I love the potential it has for being a great story. I think James Patterson's a very underrated comic book writer.
Yeah.
I think he deserves a lot more attention than he's been getting. And this kind of shows why he should be getting more attention. The characters in this are really well done, and the dialogue's actually really well done as well.
Yeah.
You know, the artwork is... it's kind of Walking Dead, the artwork, in a sense. You know, the kind of stylistic way that Walking Dead does things, but, you know, but with more colour than Walking Dead sometimes has. But, you know, it kind of avoids the typical kind of superhero, oh, everybody has huge muscles and all the women have, you know, flotation devices. They look more natural.
So it's got, like, more diversified body types.
I mean, the characters look like, you know, they look like kind of comic book versions of people you'd normally meet on the street.
Yeah.
You know, so I like the fact that... That's a factor in this, and it adds to the enjoyment because you just look at these characters and you empathize with them more because they look like normal people.
Yeah,
you know, their wings are mostly put away for them unless they're actually on the run, flying, or actually fighting. So you don't see the wings. So what you see for the most part in the early part of the story is just a group of orphans who are basically like family.
Yeah. It's got a good family dynamic in it.
This is one I'm recommending. It starts off really, really well. I am looking forward to the next issue of this because it's really good.
Yeah.
From the first issue. Anyway, moving on to you with the Miami Vice cover.
Yes. one of the coolest comic covers I've seen in a while. This is for Ant-Man number 4.
Yeah.
If you remember, I reviewed the last one a couple of weeks ago. And at the end... it transpires that Taskmaster had just been distracting Ant-Man as they went to kidnap his daughter. In this, it starts with Dr. Sondell back with the body of Mr. Cross. And they're like, hey, because of what his heart condition, he put in a load of basically procedures to try and keep himself alive as long as possible. Of course, his previous one was by cutting out the hearts of homeless men and replacing his own. But he, because of all he's done, he's got a small healing factor and also sort of a status chamber. And it's basically kept him in the state of just seconds after his own death. And they wanting the doctor to bring him back to life. And she points out that it doesn't matter, because no matter how many times I replace his heart, it just keeps on expanding because of his problem and destroying the heart. But they found out there's one person who might have a heart that would work, because there's a girl whose heart could maybe shrink and get bigger at a whim. Obviously, Ant-Man's daughter. So the plan is, we're going to cut out her heart and you're going to put it in him. Doesn't have much choice in the matter, because if she doesn't, they won't only kill her, she'll kill Ant-Man's daughter and her child. So she has, like, no means to really do anything. On the other end, Ant-Man is obviously trying to work out how to get in and save her. And he's seen the security detail for this, and it is insane. There's microwave sensors, things that pick up the smallest bit of movement, basically everything designed to stop him. That's when Grizzly gives him a suggestion of a Supervillains Anonymous that he has been going to, where he meets a former villain who fought for the Machine Smith, who basically is a living machine who can interface with anything. And they come to agreement on how they can break into the place if he gives Smith a job. He's trying to go legit and he needs his help. So he agrees and they go. He infiltrates the place. He goes in, but he finds that it's too late. And guy's already awake. And so we're guessing the surgery's already happened.
Ooh.
What's happened to the daughter? Not sure at the moment, but yeah, it's very interesting. But I gotta say, I'm really loving Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Like, he's not only interesting, but it's got some crack and humor in it. It's like, when he gets into the place, he still has to deal with the security. He's like, oh, you can tell these guys are just for hire. They're sort of milking it.
Yeah.
Like, they're not getting paid. They're not getting healthcare or dental. I give my employees healthcare and dental. Shows you really care. And, like, when he's leaving, he's just like, it's all right, guys. I'll find you on LinkedIn. And, like, I love that. It's just, like, the references that make it real life. It might be dated in a few years, but for now, it's really good.
Yeah.
And, of course, seriously, stuff's going down. So, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Right. My turn again. This one, I'm not too sure. Right. I'm just going to take a minute. We get all these comics from Comics Domain, yeah?
Yes.
I've got to applaud whoever is picking them out for us, because they send us a really eclectic mix every single week. And I love the fact that we're being introduced by so many to so many different titles.
Yeah.
You know, that we just want to pick up afterwards.
Yeah.
It's great. So thank you, Comics Domain, for sending us all these eclectic titles. Anyway, IDW, Edward Scissorhands, number 6. I didn't know Edward Scissorhands had a comic. And this is Hole Again, Part 1. Edward has his kind of his home at the top of the hill. And Meg and everyone else have rallied round and they're now redecorating his home, putting lights in, various things like that. Right? And I'm a bit confused about this because it's very... the artwork's very kind of... It's very stylistic, but also quite child-friendly.
Okay.
Yeah, on the inside. It looks like it's designed to appeal to a much younger audience. And I watched Edward Scissorhands, and I wouldn't say it was definitively a kid's movie.
It is very cartoonesque, isn't it?
Yeah. And
it's a beautiful art style.
It's a really good art style. I'm not knocking the art style. It's just kind of... It's slightly anachronistic to me. I love what's going on in the story, the fact that he's finally got a TV and he's got, like, this Kevlar remote control so he doesn't chop it into pieces. But when he drops it, he can't pick it up because he's got scissors for hands. But, yeah, he's got a TV, and there's a woman on TV who's saying that she can do all sorts of wonderful things with makeup and beauty treatments and various things like that. And so they're trying to... he has it into his head that he can be normal just like everyone else. So I am curious as to how that's going to go, because as we know, a lot of these makeover shows are quite superficial.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't think they've dealt with anyone like Edward before. But...
so it seems like a unique take when the movie was a lot about, like, the harrowing reality this guy has to go through.
Yeah.
This looks like fun adventures with Edward Scissorhands.
You understand why it's anachronistic to me. It doesn't quite make sense, because I know what the movie's supposed to be about, and then I'm reading this and I'm like, it doesn't quite make sense in my head. Edward isn't, you know, he could be a lot more bitter about his circumstances, but he's not.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why I've always liked him as a character.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I'm curious as to what's going to happen, but I don't know if it's for me.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I don't know if it's my cup of tea with regards to comics. It is one of those really eclectic, eccentric comics that we, you know, that we always get sent, but I think it's trying to change the character too much.
Yeah.
For my liking. I like the fact that Edward's quite silent throughout the comic. You know, he says only like a handful of words in the entire comic. Everyone else is really chatty and talkative.
That's similar to how he was in the movie.
It's similar to how he was in the movie. But I don't know. Maybe it's the art style. Maybe it's too bright and colourful. There is one interesting subplot in this involving Meg's grandmother's diary. Okay. Which somehow I think they're going to tie that into Edward's story, because they do mention the house on the hill, right? And they're basically, to fit with the whole idea of memory, it's all coloured blue.
Yeah.
You know, for like a couple of pages. And I think that has something to do with Edward's story. I think
so there might be an overarching thing, even though it does seem like fun adventures with Edward is a hand, it might have that, other that's, thing going on.
That's actually the one thing that would makes me want to continue reading, is that subplot.
Yeah.
If that becomes the main plot, I think that'll be something really interesting.
Yeah.
But at the moment, as you said, it's fun adventures with Edward Scissorhands. So it doesn't quite appeal to me, but that subplot has got my attention.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
Okay, next up, I have got a manga that I've been reading.
Yes.
Yamada-kun and the Seven Witches.
Are there any witches in this?
Not as far as I've read. Like, I've gone through the whole of Volume 1. There hasn't been a witch yet. The cover's also a bit misleading because it's very fanservice-y looking, and it's not a very fanservice-y show for the most... manga for the most part.
I've got to ask, how can you tell it's a witch in the comic? Do they wear hats?
Oh, she's got a witch's hat in the cover, but...
Is it like witchcraft works, where you can actually tell who's a witch because of the fact that they wear a hat?
Maybe all the characters are witches and I just haven't...
but there's only supposed to be seven, it says on the cover.
Unless there's no one who's been explained to be a witch yet.
All right.
Anyway, Yamada-kun and the Seven Witches. Yamada is one of those guys that's described as a problem child. Always causing trouble, not getting good grades, all of that jazz.
So kind of like all of us in this office.
No, we're too goody-goody for this guy. This is actually your troublemaker. We're the other type of problem child.
I'm sorry, but Ben, put a leather jacket on you and take you back to like 1950s, you'd be the problem child with that hairdo. You know, you'd be, you know, you'd be clicking your fingers and hanging out
like
in diners.
One, but I'm too nice of a guy for that.
I know.
So, he, like I said, he's a problem child, and he just likes to mess with people.
Yeah.
And one day, like after being scolded in the teacher's office, he comes out, and he sees Urara Shisharashi, probably mispronouncing that, but and he's like, "Oh, that's that goody two shoes, straight A honor student child. I'm gonna go in front of her and then sneer at her." And so he goes up the stairs in front of her, sneers, and trips over, falling down the stairs and knocking himself out. When he wakes up in her body. He looks down and he is her. Of course, first reaction, he freaks out a bit and then goes to find where the hell his body has gone. And he finds her in class, basically just doing what she always does, studying, asking questions, being a good student.
And freaking everyone out at the same time.
Oh, yes. Because, as I said, he's a problem child. They're not used to him being goody two shoes. Sat with his knees together, his feet turned inwards like a cute little girl does in an anime. And he basically drags her out, brings her to the roof, and like, what the hell's going on? And she's like, "Well, obviously, we fell down the stairs together. If we do it again, it will fix it. But I prefer not to do this again during school hours because I don't want to miss any more classes. So after school, we'll do this." And like, begrudgingly, he agrees and then finds out what a rough time she has at school.
Yeah.
Issues she has with all the guys perving on her, including teachers. And the problems she's having with bullying, like really severe bullying.
Yeah.
And he confronts her about it and says, "Why don't you do anything?" And she's like, "Don't do anything, I will sort it." But it comes to a point where he's face to face with a bully. And he's like, "All right, I've had enough. I'm going to kick your ass. Because I might as well. I'm sick of this." She comes in and stops him. But he accidentally punches. It's getting confusing with all this, like the she's and he's. But he punches her in his body, and the bully gets freaks the hell out because he's like, "Oh no, she is fighting back. I was not prepared to this. I thought she was just a pushover.
Yeah,
and I didn't think she'd go as far as fighting."
Yeah.
So ends up bullies start leaving her alone, and it's kind of time for them to try and switch back bodies. So they fall down the stairs again. It doesn't work. It's like, "Well, there's one thing we didn't try. When we fell down, we accidentally kissed. So let's try that." And she kisses him and they switch back into their own bodies. So they find out they've got this ability and they kind of work out ways they can abuse it. Like, she's a straight A student and so she does his tests for him. There's problems with like peeping toms, and he takes her body and just wrecks shop. And it's very amusing. You see how they interact whenever people sort of get hints of their powers, how they deal with the issues, and how they change as characters. And that's just still through the first issue.
It's getting quite complex, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
And it's really interesting because, like I said, they're interesting characters. And this girl's sort of, through her actions on the body swap, he is making her more popular when before she was a goody two shoes who didn't get noticed. So it's quite interesting to see how it develops and how they're both developing as as people when not in their own bodies.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm definitely going to be looking out for volume 2.
Fantastic.
It was interesting as hell.
Fantastic. Right. We've got two things left. Starting off with Image Comics. And according to this, it is 20 pages of art, no ads inside, so it's awesome. This is One Hit Wonder, And it's got Richie Reese, the main character, on the cover with a blonde suede t-shirt, pointing a gun with a silencer saying, go ahead, make my day.
Richie Rich?
Richie Reese.
Oh, okay. Right. That would be a completely different comic.
Now, character of Richie Reese, this is issue 5 of One Hit Wonder. Now, the character of Richie Reese, he was a one-hit wonder child actor, and he's a horrible person. Right? He's working for a mafia boss, but apparently he's a member of the Saraceno family, which has been cast out from the mafia. And this starts off with him auditioning people for a particular role, and quickly moves on to Mafia Land, okay. Or Mafia World, which is a theme park for mafiosos. It's a secret island theme park for mafiosos, and, you know, they have, like, an annual meeting there of all the families, and, you know, it's like an AGM and, you know, a festival all rolled into one. The Saraceno family decided to crash because they were banished from being mafiosos 20 years previous for something they didn't do. Apparently, something that the Saraceno head
didn't do.
But yeah, he gets killed in this, by the way. But yeah, Richie Reese and his friend T, they've got some great banter in this because of who he is. He's basically a wisecracking, cocky, brash, just, you know, complete and utter tool. He is a tool. And he's got it into his head to go around taking out the other members of the Saraceno family, so he's the only person left.
Yeah. Now,
because he couldn't kill his dad, but he hates his brothers and sisters. And it's an unusual comic.
Yeah.
It's brash and it's colourful, and it's actually the artwork is actually quite nice, if a little simplistic at times. But not like Charlie Brown simplistic. We're talking like simple lines and simple, you know, simple movements, that sort of thing. It's a nice comic, but I think that this is just a prelude to more action in the future.
Yeah.
I think this is like, you know that scene in the cafe in Pulp Fiction?
Yeah.
Where Vincent Vega and I've forgotten the other character's name. You know, Sam Jackson's character.
Sorry, I always know it's Sam.
Yeah, we know him as Samuel L. Jackson. But where the two of them are sitting and they're talking.
Do you know what they call a Royale with cheese? And...
No, that's in the car.
Oh, yeah.
That's in the car.
I'm
talking about the scene in the cafe, in the diner before, you know, before Honey Bunny and What's-His-Face decide to rob the diner.
Yeah.
And there's that little conversation about how Jules is going to give up all his possessions and just walk the earth like Kwai Chang Kae.
Yeah.
Right. You know that something's going to happen because, you know, you've seen the beginning of the movie because Jules and, Honey Bunny and whatever, and her boyfriend decide to rob the diner. So you know that's going to happen. It's just, this feels like that little conversation, you know, that little prelude to something big happening. That's what this feels like. So.
Well, tell you, it's the first issue, isn't it?
No, issue 5.
Issue 5.
But it does have, like, Mafia Land in this, and this is kind of, it feels like the closing of one door and the opening of another.
It seems that there's a lot going on in it. Like,
yeah, I mean, the nice thing is,
you might need, like, Mafia Land sort of needs explaining, so.
They do explain it to a degree in this.
Yeah, they've done that, so in the future they can do. You don't have to explain Mafia Land again.
Well, the other nice thing about this is, it feels more like it feels like one door closing, another door opening.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of standalone as well as being part of the series. You could just pick this up and read it.
Yeah.
You know, as kind of a single chapter, and you can enjoy it as a single chapter as well as being part of the series.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing for something that is effectively just a series, you know, it's a continuing story. So, yeah, One Hit Wonder, an interesting one. I'm going to watch this one with a degree of interest as well, because I like my mafia stuff. Anyway, moving on to the final feature of the day, and this is volumes 1 to 3 of one of my favorite manga at the moment. This is the sci-fi horror series set on Mars, called Terra for Mars. Now, this is the idea. In the future, mankind is overcrowding the Earth. Resources are running low. So they decide to try and terraform the planet Mars. So they send up research projects, stuff like that, and they've then send up insects and stuff like that to try and see if the terraforming process is working.
Yeah.
One of the insects they send up is cockroaches, right? It's
makes sense. They can survive pretty much nuclear blasts and stuff. So
cockroaches are sent, and it's decades later, and they send a research team to find out what's happened with on the planet, what's going on, how is the terraforming process progressing. Something happens to the research team, and they never report back. Now, several decades later, another team is sent to find out what happened to that to a team that was sent, a kind of an armed team, just in case, because they've had some weird readings coming back from Mars. So an armed team is sent. Something happens to them. Nobody knows what's happened. So this time, a super-armed team. Now, what they've done, genetic research on planet Earth has advanced to the point where they basically can create chimeras out of people. They can mix human DNA with the genetics of specific insects and birds and animals to create humans who, with just one injection, can develop these insect-like or animalistic or bird-like powers. And abilities, you know, superhuman abilities. And their leader, one of them is basically a wasp type guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a, you know, not just any wasp, he's like this big killer wasp type thing. And the mission's going okay, but then something goes wrong, and they find that what they're facing are humanoid cockroaches who are actually quite intelligent. To a degree, it's kind of the hive intelligence, and most of them get killed.
Okay.
Now, by volume three, you spin on another 10 years or so.
Yeah.
And there's a return mission now. One of the two people to survive from that first mission, in the first volume, he is now the leader of the second mission. He's the wasp guy, and he is hard as nails. But along with him, you have a bunch of other people. All of whom have a bunch of other people, and you have different countries joining in this mission now, because whatever's happening on Mars is a potential threat to all of Earth.
Yeah.
And so they go back to Mars and they find out they're basically collecting samples of these terraformers, as they call them. You know, that's the name given to these cockroach creatures. Only problem is there's a lot more of them than they thought. And they are adapting at a rate that they never actually considered.
Yeah.
Not only that, they seem to have adopted the same principle as the humans who've gone to Mars. The ones who can change into insects.
Yeah.
Or have insect abilities. Somehow these cockroaches are managing to take those abilities for themselves.
Ooh, not good.
Yeah. Basically, if they have the ability to do what humanity can do, changes the whole ballgame. Anyway, Terraformers is, if you like sci-fi and horror, this is pretty much the one to read at the moment. Story by Yu Susuga is really, really well thought out, including the political side of things, which often falls by the wayside when you've got this with heavy action horror type stuff. The artwork by Kenichi Tachibana is really, really well done. Really impressive, very clean lines, you know. So it's not like Gyo and Pupa and various other horror like that, where they use, you know, very scratchy lines to kind of promote this idea that something horrific is going on. It's very, very clean lines, which actually helps with it being an action series. You know, there is a lot of action in this. There's a lot of combat in this. But there's also some technical stuff as well. It's been very well researched when it comes to kind of the animalistic side of things, you know, what creatures have been used and spliced into these humans to give them their abilities. And when it explains that stuff, you kind of go, okay, right now I get why she's, you know, why someone like a character like Michelle McKenzie is really that strong. She's not just inherited stuff from her dad. She's also got this as well, which means she can basically punch a cockroach in half.
Yeah,
which doesn't sound impressive when you say it like that, but when you think of them as like 7-foot giant cockroach humanoids, then it becomes more impressive.
Yeah,
you know, they're not Goku by any measure. They're not, you know, Kenshiro by any measure, but they do what they can, Unfortunately, they may be fighting a losing battle. So, yeah. Terraformers, I think it's the sci-fi horror to read at the moment.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interest in it. Even so much as going and making a plushie of a cockroach, which I would not buy for anybody.
Yeah, that thing looks more terrifying than anything.
Yes. Anyway, that's available now. I think there's several more volumes available now of Terraformers, so from Viz Media. So I recommend it. It's really worth reading.
Yeah.
News just in. Apparently Takeshi Miike is directing the film of Terraformers. That should be interesting.
Yeah. So I think that's
Yeah, that's
for...
pretty much it. That's us done.
We have been 4Panel. Check us out, thegeekshow.co.uk. Hit us up on Facebook. Just search for The Geek Show, or at Twitter at TGS_TheGeekShow.
Yes. Right. We'll see you all next week. Take care. Have fun. We'll be back next week with more comic-y goodness.
Yep.
And maybe some more commentary about the Fantastic Four from Ben.
Oh, yes. Gonna be talking lots of Fantastic Four.